So, I always admit to having multiple hustles as far as potential streams of income. And one of my most proud and most successful affiliations has been with Writer's Block Coffee, which you've heard of at the top of the show. But what I found very funny is a little company called ShipABagOfDicks.com. I sent this to my cousin as there to be funny, but you should just let people know that if someone sends you a bag of gummy dicks or rainbow flavored dicks or rainbow candy, rainbow looking penises, as well as a full 6-inch, 12-inch chocolate penis, it's not that you mean to be mean to them. It's supposed to be, the intent is lighthearted and a humorous joke. And it's designed to amuse the recipient. Because it's not, they don't really have it as a way to send it not anonymously. Please let the person know that you're sending them a bag of penises and a glitter bomb because you think they are the bomb. And basically, by purchasing their products, you represent that you're not trying to use them to harass the recipient in any or unlawful way or purpose. It's just to be funny. But for those persons that you can't stand, this is a great way to get these bozos. They'll be washing glitter out of their nose or rinsing glitter out of their nose for weeks and also vacuuming it up off their floor. And you can tell them in a flavorful way to eat a penis. So, shipabagofdicks.com is where you can actually send a very humorous joke or get back at someone you can't stand. Use my promo code TIFROGOTJOKES to get 20% off your order and shipping, and I get a nice little commission. So navigate to shipabagofdicks.com/TIFROGOTJOKES. Use my promo code TIFROGOTJOKES to get 20% off of your order. Now let's get back to the episode. Welcome to another episode of Tennessee Pro is Reading. I'm your host, Felicia Baxter. And in this episode, I'm still mourning the death of the notorious RBG and what her death implies. The GOP, your hoods are showing. Going over what actually happened to me and just talking about publishing scams and being a, what really does it mean for being a published author. And then reading for you episode 4 of Survivor Code. And I hope you enjoyed this episode just as much as I've enjoyed creating it. And thank you for listening. On September 28th, an announcement crossed over from Huffington Post and quickly followed up by most news agencies with the death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. She actually succumbed to gastrointestinal cancer, and it looks like she may have had pancreatic cancer that metastasized to her liver. She had recently been hospitalized and rapidly discharged this past summer. We were all hopeful that she was going to be able to hold on until after the election, but she was called home. Rest in power to a really great woman. And I don't know about most of y'all, but it struck me as if a member of my family had passed away because I was hopeful that this was not going to be another fly in the ointment and another great person was going to just be called home, and we were not going to be able to survive this, or it was something else that was going to come up. 2020 has been canceled already simply because of the coronavirus. And now we have this. In our grief, we would hope that she was kind of the dividing line of sanity and to being moderate. But with her death and the possibility of being replaced by someone with less legal acumen, and that is going to basically turn the clock back on what it truly is to have that seat. For her entire career, even before she was appointed by Bill Clinton, she fought, and we gained our equal rights by fighting cases that were brought up for men. She did things in such a classy way, using the law not only in application to men, but that's how we got all of these rights. So now you're going to insist that this fool in charge selects someone that's going to swing the courts back to some conservative, intolerant, racist agenda. Where are all the Republican women at? There's only two that want to break from the party that want to be on the right side of history. But then you got two punk-ass men, Mitt Romney and that fool from Colorado, that are willing to push this when they know they're being hypocrites. And then you get people like Cruz get on CBS Morning News and basically say, we're not being hypocrites. Why don't you just say they changed their mind too? But you never address the bottom line. The bottom line is we all now know every time y'all do this dumb shit, you basically are reinforcing your racist and intolerant tactics. You basically tried to play Obama that 8 months before the election that he should not be appointing Scalia's replacement. You should say, let the American people decide. And now, not less than 50 days before the election, y'all flip the script and say, we just gonna plow all of this through and y'all better get in line. I don't get it. It doesn't mean, it's just a power play. And it's also distraction, because now we can distract from your inability to handle this coronavirus pandemic, your inability to shore up the economy, your inability to combat global warming and these fires. This is what I cannot tolerate. And it makes me continue to think that all of y'all are jackleg. You're not for my good. And it's not safe to be in this country anymore. I've been talking about becoming an expat and what that would look like for a while now. Costa Rica or New Zealand, here I come, because the America that I once loved and want to live in, I don't think it is going to be possible for at least another decade. We're going to need several rounds of elections to either remove all the foolish Republicans and some wishy-washy Democrats out of the pile and let in new blood with new ideas. I'm hopeful that the grand old party as it is will not exist. They're going to need to be a whole purging of ideology and a rebuilding. And I don't think we're going to be able to do it in less than 50 days. We're going to need multiple rounds of elections, several different changing of policies, several different changing of guards before we're going to rectify this whole shit show of the last 4 years. And that's where I am. I don't like to break and run, but I'm only going to pick fights that I know I'm going to win. And it's not safe for a sister to be in this freaking country at this time. I'm just saying. That is why I think I took the death of the great Ruth Bader Ginsburg so hard. And I'm still having to deal with it because from a personal standpoint, her death implies so many things and it's laying bare so many issues that people are underestimating what is going to be required to change all of these things. People have been allowed and they're still being allowed to show their willingness to be complicit in the obvious wrong of it all and just go along like a herd when it absolutely makes no sense. And the detriment is going to do down the line to another group of women, to another group of minorities. They have no idea what the implications of what they're doing at this time. And they're employed and blowing it all up just for their own power. I think it's despicable and I think it's disgusting. And it is a taint on her memory to basically to do what, to be the hypocrites and the absolute racist cowards that you actually are, man. But at least you know who the enemies are. They're right in front of you. And if you are insistent on continuing to allow these people to be governed and to lead you, shame on you too. And that's why I will vote, but I'm out. If the election and the next series of elections don't remove some of these fools from power, because this has to stop today. The bottom line is it proves. You got to vote during this election and also local elections, because the ideology that's being promoted by this administration is despicable. And we cannot continue to be a party to any of this. And that's all I got to say on that. So this next part of the segment goes down or is a part of the Authors Beware. There are a lot of unscrupulous players in this market. I self-published my initial book, Not My Family, last year with Author House. And even though I was given deeply discounted services, quote unquote, there was still a lot of things lacking. There was a whole bunch of add-on services that were astronomically, they were asking a ridiculous amount of money. And I thought that the thousands that I had paid would have at least given me initial run. I would have at least sold my first 200 or 250 books. However, that did not happen. I only sold 46. So towards the end of last year, I started rewriting it. And I'm learning so much about query letters, book proposals, taglines, pitch sheets. It's just, and the potential for it to be picked up and to make it into a movie. I've entered it in several contests that have been screened and vetted by Screencraft. It is registered through the WPA. I own the copyright. The copyright is registered, which I actually own. So it's a lot going on with that book, but I did not or was not really aware of a consistent or a persistent publishing scam still coming out of evidently the Philippines or the South Pacific. We get these people that are very low paid, and it's just basically a scamming ring. I'll have the links to these websites in my podcast, but indie writers are almost at the mercy of these fools. And one of the newest ones on the game or in the game was Fact and Fiction Literary Agency. There were, should have been several things that really kind of should have stood out with this. When you go to their website, the pictures, it looks really legit. You know, there's a phone number. There is a the location, but you look in the address line in any most reputable businesses that are in New York City. The moniker is like New York, New York, and with the zip code. Well, this one, it says Manhattan, New York. So I was like, strike one. If most people know that there are five boroughs, but usually with this particular borough in on Madison Avenue, it's New York City is basically New York City, New York. So that was number one. And number two, when I spoke to the representative, Andy Millstone, she had a pretty significant accent, and she sounded kind of like the agent that worked with me through Author Heist, who I think is also of Philippine descent. But she didn't, her voice did not look like her picture. And when I was transferred, or when the financial officer Kenneth contacted me to take my $3,000 payment for editorial services, he also had what appeared to be a Pacific Rim accent too. So I was like, okay. But then I said, okay, they appear to be a legitimate, but then I started getting a little bit nauseous because it's a lot of money that I worked hard for. I started doing some checking and trying to get to see any online complaints about them. I initially went over to the buyer's Authors Beware site, and at the time, before I actually paid them the money, there was nothing on that site. Basically, was not posted till the next day. There was nothing on the Better Business of New York, but the problem was there was no listing or nothing for the Better Business Bureau of New York, like at all. There was no complaints, but they did not have a presence and they were not listed with as part of Chamber of Commerce, I guess. So that's when I went to the list of incorporated businesses or business permits through the State Department of New York. They're not listed there either. Not even listed or incorporated in Delaware. So that's when I got really anxious. And I went over to PayPal, and I noticed another thing, which was that the email address had in its, the email address was actually from info@factandfiction.com, but it was attached to unverified overseas account with somebody that had nothing, it's not even listed in this company's website. So then I started paying a little bit more closer attention and starting to try to find out if this company actually has, that's supposed to have been around since 2005, if they have an electronic blueprint online, nothing. This chief CEO, she's not listed with the industry. She's not on LinkedIn. This Andy Millstone is not listed in the database of reputable literary agents, even though she's supposed to have been in there. None of these officers and none of these people are associated, have an online presence. So, and then you call me back and you tell me you're listening to my podcast. And it's very interesting that you're supposed to work from home but I get all of these hits from new listens and downloads from the Philippines.
But this is what got me more than anything. If you're going to call me and you tell me you have to go into the office to work your shift, please don't have roosters. I can hear the roosters crowing in the background. So what I included in the notes is my last interaction with Andy and this ghost of a company. I basically confirmed that PayPal had reversed the charges and put that money back on my MasterCard. But what I was completely baffled with the gall of this company, because they said this is what they asked me. Felicia, also to resolve this minor hiccup in this transaction, I was advised by our chief finance officer to just refer you to our partner editing firm, Beacon Books. They are listed as a scam also on the Buyers Beware, Office Beware website. So you could just process the dues with them directly. However, Fact and Fiction is still a firm that will represent your work to traditional publishers. They are based in California, if you have any, if in case you receive a call from them today. And as soon as this crosses over, I get a phone call, which I'm sure is just another voiceover internet phone number through Google or whatever, with the LA area code. But I was already hip to her. I was just making sure that I wasn't going to be out $3,000 and get nothing for my efforts. So I wrote this back for the disconnect email. It says, "Bless your heart, I disconnected and blocked you. By the way, if you want to be considered a legitimate literary agent that doesn't work from home, you may not want to have roosters crowing in the background. My mother's family raised pigs, vegetables, and chickens. The reason I initiated a request for reversal and a fraud alert with my credit card is for several reasons. Legitimate businesses that use in-house editorial services don't use unverified overseas PayPal accounts. Fact and Fiction is not a legitimate New York-based business. Again, the roosters crowing is a giveaway. Your company nor any of its associates, including yourself, has an online presence. It's not incorporated in the U.S. I did a reverse image search on your photo. That image is from a stock image attached to multiple different accounts and names. You wanted listings or reviews of my work. I will not be giving you any, but your company is being reviewed at the following as we speak. The Better Business Bureau of Greater New York, Writers Beware, and when I make a formal complaint to the Department of Justice, I will. And I will be dragging your company everywhere. This is part of that first part of legitimate dragging that this company needs. FYI, the contract I signed because you're not a legitimate business is bogus and not enforceable. And your company can't represent me if you don't exist. So kick rocks, you fraudulent, lazy mugs. And my book has a registered copyright, which I own. If you try to submit without my permission or represent me in any way or seek to profit from illegally republishing, that is considered copyright infringement and subject to penalties and prosecution. Good luck to you, Felicia." So I just don't like to be played. I work so hard for every dime that I have. And for you to try me like that, it is reprehensible and absolutely disgusting. And again, navigate to www.writerbeware.com or www.victoriastrauss.com to get updates on this company, as well as to navigate to the State Better Business Bureau to file, charges against these people when you get tried. We work hard for and have control of our work. We don't need to be relieved of our money just because you would prefer to profit and to scam people. Again, Fiction, which I think is rich. Fact and Fiction Literary Agency is a work of fiction. They do not exist. Don't give them any money and tell them to kick rocks. Chu Ping, Wuhan, China.
Reading a letter her mother wrote days before her death.
到我的第一胎。
To my firstborn.
如果您正在阅读此书。
If you're reading this.
我继续与祖先在一起。
I have gone on to be with the ancestors.
我或您父亲的准备可能没有时间了。
There may be no time for my or your father's preparation.
但是没关系。
But that's okay.
我们需要您继续生活并继续工作。
We need you to live and continue the work.
我需要您转到以下 GPS 坐标。
I need you to go to the following GPS coordinates.
31.21,950,1560的 121.47
31.211,0950, 121.474,1560.
Package of Chuping travels a long distance, all the way from the Wuhan province to San Francisco and then on to Washington. DHL tracking waybill 12345678891 was addressed to one of the most reclusive of the snot crew, MA-160 SSPE Craig, the designation for measles at the CDC. Craig opens the package and out slides an iPhone data chip with 4 TB of encrypted data. And the saga continues. Escape from New York, the beginning. Of Survivor Code, Escape from New York. There's an entrance, or the scene enters, or begins with, at 125th in Amsterdam, the Sloper family home. It is obvious that neither Kat nor her mother affiliate, Sloper MD, is typical. Both African-American queens within their own right. So when Kat approaches her family on 125th, hearing the 50 cents PIMP coming through the window of the attic with her mother singing happily alone, she didn't know whether to be concerned that this song was on her mother's playlist or that her mother had a playlist. Or she knew all the words and was surprisingly on beat. Kat unlocks and closes the front door, proceeds out the stairs. As PIMP ends, it segues into Stanky Leg. She climbs the stairs to the attic level of the house. Then she sees her mother among the Louis Vuitton trunks, doing the Stanky Leg and hitting the blonde combo. Mama! Ophelia stops and grabs her chest. She opens her arms and her daughter walks in for a tight embrace and they're both her left. Kat, once released from her mother's embrace, she sits at the window seat surveying the enchanted land of her childhood. She would spend endless hours here as a child to play dress up and have tea with dolls. She picks up the monogram hat box belonging to her great-grandmother Mamie and removes a powder blue hat with big, bright flowers, placing it squarely on her head. Ophelia goes over to the stack of papers because that had become part of their ritual. It was weekly testing and the revealing of the test results as they sorted and packed the family possessions in the attic.
They each would perform nasal swabs, sealing and label the packages to be picked up within the hour. It helps that Dr. Ophelia Sloper had been the director of LabCorp of New York during her semi-retirement. She, Ophelia Sloper, calls the courier as Kat walks the samples down to the LabCorp box at the end of the stoop, returning to the attic. Mama, so Brian hasn't been tested? And then Kat says, I don't think so. He's been in Montauk since Valentine's Day. He doesn't think any of this applies to him, and he's still mad I won't bail out the properties. He wants you to save the condo and Montauk house with your own funds. Actually, what he wants me to do is sell the family property in Tennessee and give the proceeds to he and Rodney. He can't be serious. As a heart attack, his reasoning is technically that is his family's land and he should have a say in his disposal. Wait, the same land he and his family were going to let the state auction for taxes? And now you're managing with the cell tower leasing that's leasing the land, generating income and profit, and they were ready to lose it all for pennies? What kind of dumbass reasoning is that? Mama, he really doesn't think the property is worth what the tax assessor placed per year. He has no idea that the cell tower leasing is generating $150,000 per month. Do you think he suspects how much you're actually worth? Maybe. He and his lawyer snooped around Chase Wealth Management, and he was informed that our accounts were managed by two different departments, but he has no idea of the extent of it. But the prenup, he gets nothing, my inheritance, Sloper LTD, not even my salary and retirement at the university. He just knows I could possibly stroke a check and his issues will all go away. He's more mad that he even has to ask. He is the black superstar and has to come crawling to his wife for handouts. You know, he's always been like that, Kat. Real good looking and smart, but something was always missing. The appearance of strength, but missing something. Mama, he thinks we're crazy with the test and the extra baths. He and his boys still going to the bar, hanging out at Montauk. I heard they picked up the boat just this week. Where's your stuff from the condo on 5th? Everything except for a few books and art supplies and clothes and sneakers are packed and moved to Tennessee soon. Well, the fool in charge, making fun of the truth, holding rallies, daring people to wear masks. It's starting to feel like D.C. and Harlem in the 60s that burned when Reverend King was shot, not 2020. Something is happening that ain't good. You know, I did see Brian briefly. No masks, wouldn't use hand sanitizer. Thought I was crazy. I was crazy prepared to live with you in the testing. Laughing in my face, paranoid and overly dramatic. It's as if he could care less. Yeah, he really doesn't. I don't think he ever really knew how to love you. Your grand was right, you know. Then mom goes over to the box of letters from Mamie Johnson to Catherine. Hands Kat a letter yellowed with age. She remembers opening and reading it before her grandmother had died and starts reading aloud. To my beautiful great-granddaughter, Kat Baby, I am and will be proud of you and always will be proud of you. But your husband ain't shit. He's a first-class country pussy-ass nigga who will never understand your greatness. He will do dumb shit and take you down with him just to prove his manhood. Love yourself and protect your grind. Love Grand Mamie. P.S. The contents of my savings deposit box, jewelry box are yours always. You always have to keep something on the side from these no-count men. And Kat shakes her head and smiles at the memory. You know, I had 3 miscarriages early on with your father and in our marriage. You know, all boys. But you stayed. You were so big and strong. 10 pounds, 2 ounces, vaginal delivery, no sugar, no tears. They both laugh, hugging each other. I waited for you, Kat, and I wanted you. I know I have to protect you from the folly of your man in the hospital. You are all I have. Mama, you are all I got. I promise to be careful.
I promise to be careful. The car honks downstairs. Kat hugs her mother, puts on a mask, heading down to the town car. The driver jumps out, opens the door, and closes it, dropping her minutes later at the Columbia downtown ER. Later the same day, this is still March 18th, Montauk beachfront property, Brian Cooper. You see Brian actually floating in a small boat. The scene fades in and you see a Ralph Lauren clad Brian on a John boat. Then his body is racked by shaking chills. He pulls the coat and hat on his head tatted down his head, ramps up the motor, leading the boat back to the dock. His cell phone rings. It's Abby, his assistant. Hey, Mr. Cooper. Brian. Hey, Abby, what's good? Not a whole bunch. The order for the studio to close came within the last hour. Until further notice, everyone will be working remotely. On-air talent will receive secure computer and equipment to continue production. Where can I send all of this? What do you think? Why do you think they're doing this? Abby pauses. She holds the phone from her face, giving it a the fuck look. Well, coronavirus has killed over 10,000 people, and we are in a pandemic. Isn't your wife a public health doctor? Yeah, she has been following this for a while and mentioned something. So do you think we will be back in a few weeks? Doubtful. This thing is not relenting. I will plan on remote production through the end of the summer, at least. End of the summer? It's only March. I'm in Montauk for now. Send everything out here. You okay, sir? It's just my allergies acting up. Can you send some Advil, Allegra, and Robitussin too? Sure, I'll add some green tea and raw honey. And some Macallan scotch. For medicinal purposes, I can make a hot toddy with green tea and honey. Laughs at another coughing fit, and he gets an ache in his chest, and he disconnects. March 19th, Columbia ER, 2:30 a.m. Poor Kat. It's 2:30 in the morning, and she's only 12 hours into a shift, threatening to go into the new day. She has been running from bed to bed, makeshift isolation area to area, patients clinging to life. The last count with the ambulance is stacked up 40 deep, hundreds of sick and dying patients waiting in never-ending lines, as if waiting to get into the next best club. This would be like no other night she worked ever as a physician. She takes only a moment to retrieve the cloth from her locker, spray it with Clorox solution, wipes down her disposable gown and mask to respond to the last plastic bay at the end of the pod. She would wipe her face shield before entering the pod, gasping when she recognizes Bianca, the ED director. She walks to her bedside. Bianca sits up, gasping. It's my time. Get out while you can. I'm already dead. She loosens the grip and lowered back slowly to the mattress. The long-term nurse's pulse becomes erratic and then she flatlines. The team immediately starts CPR. They run the code for over 60 minutes, all in disbelief. One of their own is gone. Text, nurse's student. Bianca had trained, wanting to help, but knowing nothing more can be done. Kat lies hands on the tech performing CPR, listens with a stethoscope for a full minute, and pronounces time of death 4:16 a.m. With that announcement, nurses and techs file in, disconnecting her leads, tears blurring their vision, and Kat leans against the adjacent wall. She removes her gloves, throwing them into the overcrowded flowing trash can, warily walks to her locker, removing the Clorox and rag, wiping down her gown and shoe covers before removal. Hey, Allison, calling out to the charged nurse over the noise. You need this more than I do. She hands the nurse the used supposedly disposable PPE. Allison smiles and runs to the next alarm, taking the equipment with her. Kat looks out into the melee. She takes her hand sanitizer, cleaning her hands, takes out her Clorox dermicidal wipe and cleans her stethoscope, putting it in her bleach-stained backpack. Her Zora Neale Hurston book, Warm Washington Manual. She noticed the patient belongings bag that Bianca had handed her Valentine's Day night to put her overpriced clothes in. The time was only 1 month prior to seemingly a lifetime ago. She removes the Judith Lieber gold brick bag, zipping it up in her backpack, leaving the Oscar de la Renta gown, Louboutin heels, and cleaning solution and wipes. Used gowns with the locker door open. She texts her driver to meet her at the doctor's entrance and calls her mother. Mom, I'm tired. It's time to go to Tennessee now. Yeah, call me when you're on your way. And this is the end of episode 4, the beginning of this escape from New York City. Wow, y'all, I hope y'all enjoyed that just as much as I enjoyed creating it. Join me next time as I create episode 5, the all-electric Land Rover, as Mama and I, Thelma and Louise, it out of NYC. The middle, escape from New York, bitches, we out to Tennessee. And thank you for joining me. So I find solace in being able to create, and between my podcasts, which I have two channels, one which I'm actually using right now to create my fictional podcast, but also my usual channel where I talk about whatever I'm reading, what my friends and I are fussing about, as well as just general shenanigans that's going on in the world. And I'm really exploring the possibility of becoming a U.S. expat. And it's just where I'm going to settle in on the next time, you know, or what my next chapter is going to be. There's so many things that are going on with my life right now. For example, I'm closing the sale on a home that I've absolutely have owned for the last 16 years. Doing some minor repairs, moving on to closing on Friday, and then I'm out. And I am blessed with the possibility of being allowed to work from home, but my home is anywhere I decided to be. And I'm going to be exploring that as I complete the cycle on my Hamilton Heights script, as I continue the edits on the rewrite of Not My Family, as well as Survival Code. I think there are multiple episodes of that is going to come up. And scamsters, beware. Y'all not going to fit. Y'all ain't finna talk me to death. Fact and fiction, y'all kick rocks and any company like y'all. Please don't contact me. I ain't got nothing for you. You don't want this smoke. And I'm still loving the idea of Tennessee Fro online bookstores. I'm adding to weekly to my chatterbooks from suggestions from other readers as well as from other podcasters, as well as Star Trek fan fiction, biographies, and book swag, all at reasonable prices. You can navigate to Writer's Block and use TenFro is reading as promo code, but I'm hopeful that Black and Brown Coffee, the Kings of the Roasting, as well as the, there is an African-American winery that's actually out of Texas that I want to become an influencer for. So I'll be adding those promo codes in upcoming days. But meanwhile, you can navigate to Writer's Block Coffee and use my promo code TenFroIsReading, as well as to, at the top of the show, I mentioned Ship a Bag of Dicks, TenFro Got Jokes. to get percentages off of your shipping. If you leave me an email with suggestions of additions to my playlist on Spotify and non-trolly comments, I actually may read them on air and may use your comments as I create upcoming episodes of Survivor Code. And as always, I'm so tickled that you guys have tuned in to listen to me ramble on about just random things and what I'm reading. And I hope you enjoy this episode just as much as I've enjoyed creating it. And until next time, bye.